The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from BBC.com, we have Blind Paralympian Prepares for Channel Swim Attempt. Melanie Barrett was born with congenital toxoplasmosis, which left her with severe visual impairment. A Paralympic gold medalist is gearing up to attempt to be the first blind woman to swim the English Channel. Melanie Barrett from Leamington Spa won 2 gold medals for swimming, as well as 2 silvers and a bronze at the Atlanta and Sydney Paralympics, and is thought to be the first blind person to swim across Lake Geneva. Her window to complete the 21-mile swim is from 27th August to 1st September and should take her about 14 hours. She said she always likes a challenge and that the English Channel was like the Everest of swimming. The swim raised money for British Blind Sport. I always like a challenge in life. This certainly has turned out to be quite a huge one, and I haven't even swum it yet, she told BBC Coventry and Warwickshire. Ms. Barrett was born with congenital toxoplasmosis, a rare condition which left her with severe visual impairment and only able to see colors and shapes. During the swim, she will use special headphones to listen to instructions from her team. She booked the swim attempt 2 years ago and said there would be elements totally out of her control. The weather, the waves, lots and lots of variables that I just have to deal with on the day and hope that it's in my favor. Plus the jellyfish as well. There could be thousands of them. Melanie from Leamington could be the first blind woman to swim the English Channel. She first learned to swim with British Blind Sport. Then I found my love for the water and went on to do well in the Paralympics, and without them, I never would have done that. I'd like to give something back to them. Follow BBC Coventry and Warwickshire on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Send your story ideas to newsonline.westmidlands@bbc.co.uk. From MSN.com, Canada's Priscilla Gagne, G-A-G-N-E, happy more blind judokas are getting a chance at Paralympics. Story by Daniel Rainbird. Canadian judoka Priscilla Gagne isn't enjoying the easy ride she once expected at the Paralympics. But as the 3-time Paralympian enters her final games, she welcomes the competition because new rules mean more blind athletes are getting a chance on the mat. Born with the genetic eye disorder retinitis pigmentosa, Gagne is categorically blind and will compete in the women's J1 57-kilogram event Thursday at Champ de Mar Arena. The 38-year-old from Sarnia, Ontario, was Canada's opening ceremonies flag bearer at the Tokyo Games in 2021, where she won silver in the 52-kilogram weight class despite sparring against judokas with better vision. In previous Paralympics, judokas with varying degrees of impaired vision were lumped together. The Paris Games will have 2 distinct categories to help level the playing field, J1 for fully blind athletes and J2 for those with partial vision. I decided to continue to Paris because of the vision classification changes, anticipating it would be a walkthrough, Gagne said. And it's not a cakewalk because of all these amazing athletes coming out. Canadian coach, whose name I won't pronounce, spelled A-N-D-R-Z-E-J, S-A-D-E-J, a key figure in the development of high-level judo in the country, said Gagne was the only fully blind athlete competing for gold in Tokyo. When the new classification was implemented after the Tokyo Games, said the Canadian Paralympic Committee and Own the Podium were keen to invest in Gagne's training. They said, well, she is a walking gold medal in Paris with a new classification, Sadege said, because she was by far the best blind athlete out of all the male and female divisions in Tokyo. Instead of dominating the field, Gagne enters the Paris Games ranked 4th. She said the door has opened to a whole new class of talented blind judokas from countries around around the world, athletes who didn't get the opportunity to compete under the previous classification. It's not only good for the blind athletes, it's good for the entire population in their country, the disabled population in their country, Gagné said. To me, it's a beautiful thing to see all these people coming out, even though they're really hard, and we didn't expect it. The coach, a former national team coach and executive at Judo Canada, has coached the Canadian Paralympic Judo team for 10 years and served on the International Blind Sport Federation's Judo Sports Committee since 2015. The former Polish judoka said before Tokyo, only 4% of para-judo athletes would have qualified as completely blind, a number that has increased exponentially under new rules. Only 3 years later, more than half of the people who are classified right now are blind, Sage said, and the numbers are similar, 600 total athletes before Tokyo, 600 now. It shows you that you had 200-plus athletes across the world who were blind and who are good judo players, who were not able to compete because they were replaced by people who are less visually impaired or not visually impaired. Some of those athletes, Gagné and Sadege alleged, include competitors with no significant vision impairment. Some of them even had driver's licenses and motorcycle licenses, Gagné said. Sadege, who played an important role in the fight to implement new classifications as part of the sport commission, expressed concerns about ethical standards across countries, highlighting how the previous rules were inadequate. There were many athletes from different parts of the world who competed in able-bodied judo successfully, but not successfully enough to benefit financially from winning medals, he said. So if they had glasses on, they decided to switch to the Paralympic movement. And the classification methodology was so inadequate and was so corrupted that it was relatively easy to get to the classification. While he firmly believes athletes will continue to cheat, Sadege said judo's new classifications will make it more difficult for athletes to be dishonest, particularly in blind judo. Although the competition remains stiff, Gagné and Sadege are confident she can bring home gold. I expect great things and wouldn't be doing it if I didn't, Gagné said. Aiming for the podium, the top of the podium, and ready to lay it all out there for the last time. The sport is in a much better place than when she first took a judo mat 15 years ago, but Gagné is 100% certain she's ready to move on after Paris. I'm 38 years old. My body is 38 years old. And this is my third cycle, she said. My dream was to go to one, and I got to go to three, and medal at potentially two, so that dream is accomplished, like three times over. In her post-Paralympic career, Gagné plans to do more conferences about the inclusion of people with disabilities and continue to teach self-defense courses for vulnerable populations. She also hopes to become a published author, with two children's books already written and a personal memoir to come. I'm ready for that next chapter, she said. I'm ready to experience the things that I exchanged or laid down for a time in order to compete at such a high level. I'm ready to pick those things up and see where they'll lead. I'm excited to have that spontaneity back, to be able to, you know, fly off the seat of my pants. This report by the Canadian Press was first published September 4th, 2024. Daniel Rainbird, the Canadian Press. From ASI. Recreation.org, Tricia Zorn, T-R-I-S-C-H-A-Z-O-R-N, the most successful athlete in the Paralympic history, written by Isabella Jimenez. With having won 55 medals, 41 gold, 9 silver, and 5 bronze, and broken 8 world records at the Paralympics in swimming, Tricia Zorn raised the bar for Paralympic athletes. Tricia Zorn was born on June 1, 1964, with aniridia. This is a congenital eye condition caused by a dysfunction in the PAX6 gene, the gene responsible for eye development. This condition causes the eye to stop developing prematurely. The only treatment for aniridia is a surgery involving a synthetic iris replacement, which reduces the amount of light entering the eyes. Before Zorn received surgery, she could only see objects that were a few feet in front of her. After the surgery, her vision improved from 2100 to 2850. The surgery's main purpose was to help cut down glare from light coming into her eyes. Luckily, this surgery does not change her classification for the Paralympics. Zorn was an athlete of swimming in every Paralympic Games from 1980 in Arnhem, Netherlands, to 2004 in Athens, Greece. In her first Games in 1980, she won 7 gold medals and collected several more throughout the years. At the 1992 Games in Barcelona, she topped the individual medal table with 10 gold medals and 2 silver. She won more medals than any other athlete at the 1996 Games in Atlanta, with 2 gold, 3 silver, and 3 bronze. Throughout the years, she has held 8 world records in the 50-meter backstroke, 100-meter backstroke, 200-meter backstroke, 200-meter individual medley, 400-meter individual medley, 200-meter breaststroke, 4x50-meter medley relay, and 4x50-meter free relay. Being the most decorated athlete in the history of the Paralympics, Zorn was inducted into the Paralympic Hall of Fame in 2012. Today, Zorn is giving back to the sport of swimming through coaching and mentoring other swimmers from beginners to masters. For information on the Student Rec and Wellness Center's inclusive programming, visit asirecreation.org/inclusive. From ftw.usatoday.com. A Paralympic France-Brazil blind soccer matchup featured an awesome penalty kick. Article by Megan L. Hall, M-E-G-H-A-N-L-H-A-L-L. There are many truly phenomenal sports at the Paralympic Games in Paris, but few events might be more impressive than blind soccer. Blind soccer, also known as blind football, has existed since 1996 and is an adaptation of soccer for athletes with vision impairment. It was first featured during the 2004 Athens Paralympic Games, and it includes some unique differences to support athletes. Per the Paralympic site, teams consist of 4 outfield players and 1 goalkeeper. Outfield players are completely blind with low visual acuity and or no light perception, and goalkeepers are typically sighted or partially sighted. To keep things fair, all outfield players must wear eye shades when playing and can use off-field guides for assistance. The ball used in the field of play makes a noise that assists players with positioning and orientation. Considering all these facts, a penalty kick is all that much more incredible. You have to see this awesome shot during a France-Brazil mashup on Tuesday. It was awesome. There is, of course, video. We occasionally recommend interesting products and services. If you make a purchase by clicking one of the links, we may earn an affiliate fee. FTW operates independently, though, and this doesn't influence our coverage. From wellandgood.com, I'm deafblind. Here's how traveling the world helps me embrace my disabilities and educate others. Elizabeth Jinnis, D-J-I-N-I-S. July was Disability Pride Month, an observance that began as one day in 1990 to celebrate the disabled community and the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. This legislation finally codified into federal law civil rights protections for people with disabilities per the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But more than 30 years since its passage, people with disabilities like advocate Katerina Rivera say there is still more work to be done, both in the way we accommodate people with disabilities and in the way we talk about them. There's an important point, for example, to be made about using the word pride and not simply awareness. For me, disability pride means I'm proud of who I am and all the parts of me, defiantly and powerfully. The world tells me I'm less worthy and less valuable and less capable, but I resist all of it, Rivera says. People who view disability in a bad light can't even conceptualize why disability pride would happen. So I love that it pushes against their limited thinking. Rivera, a disability advocate and educator, started her Instagram account, Blindish Latina, in 2020, mostly with the goal of raising awareness about her own journey with blindness and deafness, accepting her disability, and beginning to live her life as a publicly blind person. Her account helps bust the stereotypes of what it means to be disabled, from how a deaf-blind public speaker needs to acquaint herself with a new stage to explaining the difference between alt text and image descriptions, and how to embrace travel and adventure with disabilities. I knew that my journey had been really long and that I could share something to help but other people like me and educate people who are unaware of disabilities, Rivera says. I felt like there wasn't enough conversation and enough understanding of blindness being a spectrum. Since 2021, Rivera's audience has grown. She now has more than 30,000 followers on Instagram. That's when she began to offer her services as a public speaker for conferences and companies on topics like disability awareness, inclusion, and ableism in the workplace. Now she has a number of initiatives in play, including accessibility consulting, partnerships with tourism agencies to promote travel for those with disabilities, and a free ebook on 12 easy ways to be inclusive. How her career in disability advocacy started. Rivera's story with her disabilities is long and winding. She was diagnosed with hearing loss at birth, but at 17 she discovered she had Usher syndrome, a rare genetic disease that can cause hearing loss in childhood, loss of night vision by teenage years, and severe vision loss by midlife, per the National Eye Institute. Rivera learned all this just before her freshman year at Duke University, which she attended on a full scholarship. It took time to accept and accommodate her new physical reality. On her website, she calls this the pathway from denial to acceptance to self-advocacy to public advocacy. It was a new element of disability to my life that I was not expecting. The surprise and shock of it was the first thing, she says. I was going to a new environment, new friends, new people, and I didn't want to deal with the idea that I had a progressive vision disability. Talking with Rivera now, you'd find this hard to believe, as she is the font of positivity. But at the time, she refused to even talk about her diagnosis. When she did, she'd utter the same sentence, "I'm going blind," and would immediately start to cry. "It was very much a tragedy in my mind at the time," she says. It wasn't until after college that she advanced to the next step, acceptance. She moved to New York City, actively choosing a city where she wouldn't have to drive before she'd be told to stop driving. She treasured her independence, seeking out other blind people and services from the New York State Commission for the Blind, and started to live life acknowledging she was a blind person. In her early 30s, she took a job in Midtown, the most crowded part of New York City, but noticed her energy dwindling as she commuted to and from work each day. A potential solution floated through her mind. She could use a cane, but that would mean being publicly disabled. Another self-stigma and hurdle to overcome. Once I got the cane and I got over that, it was kind of a rush of inner power. I felt really confident in my identity, and I saw the cane opened up conversations, she says. Looking back, I knew there were lots of disabled people out there that were not accepting themselves. I felt that I should do something with all this capacity that I had, and that's really what spurred me to do something with my voice. How she teaches workplaces to be more inclusive. As an inclusion educator and consultant, Rivera has come to better understand certain obstacles. First, she notes how important it is to standardize accommodations for all. For example, leaving captions on for all meetings or internal videos. I see this firsthand when Rivera and I go to meet on Zoom, and I naively hadn't enabled captions in advance. She goes through the steps of showing me how to activate automated captions in my advanced meeting settings, but wisely points out this wouldn't have been a problem had I had captions on for every meeting and not just hers. Normalizing inclusive procedures in professional life also takes pressure off those with disabilities to constantly disclose that they are disabled. Not all disabilities are obvious to the average person, but just because someone's disability isn't visible to you doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Rivera's trainings focus on literal hard skills, i.e. accommodations like captions, and soft skills like identifying and avoiding common microaggressions toward people with disabilities. When it comes to our daily language, she points out how many phrases unintentionally use harmful words, like falling on deaf ears, which in this case utilizes a physical disability to mean ignorance. In her personal life, Rivera also notices the built-in biases, like when she's seated at a restaurant and the host only speaks to her partner and not her. Even though the ADA solidified civil rights protections for workers with disabilities, Rivera knows firsthand this is simply the floor. A lot of people in companies don't realize the ADA is the minimum standard, she says. It's not like you're doing an amazing job fulfilling people's accommodations requests. how traveling helps her embrace her disabilities. As Rivera built up her online platform and consulting business, she also saw a personal opportunity, the flexibility of life on the road. For the last few years, she's been traveling full-time, documenting her experiences on Instagram and her newly minted YouTube channel. Most of her work and public speaking events are virtual, allowing her to set off to destinations like Greece, Italy, Colombia, and Honduras so far. While abroad, she and her partner try to emulate normalcy as much as possible by renting an apartment, spending more than a month in one place, and sometimes joining a gym. They plan ahead, creating a document each time they stay in a new hotel or apartment with certain practices. Where are the light switches? Where do we put our shoes? Where are the outlets? Are there any obstacles Rivera could trip over? But it's the adventurous side of travel that Rivera loves and embraces, too. She's gone snow tubing and curling in Utah, hiking and horseback riding in Colombia, and spent a lot of time outdoors. In each of her videos, she reminds followers that these activities can be accessible for everyone. Rivera's activism also plays a role here. Her YouTube channel highlights everyday moments of traveling with a disability, from the importance of curb cuts, a downgraded slope from the street to the sidewalk, to her morning routine before going to a co-working space in Medellin, Colombia. These moments add nuance to what it means to live with a disability and show a real demand that exists in the disabled traveler market, an industry that may represent as much as $58 billion in unexplored revenue, per a BBC article. Unexplored by some, perhaps, but not by Rivera, she highlights one particular transportation issue she experienced in Medellin. She was boarding a cable car, the city uses them for public transportation, and missed the first carriage. While she eventually made it into the next gondola, what she needed in that instance was simple, more time, not an elaborate contraption. With disability, it's really important to highlight that a lot of times when we're talking about inclusion, it's not fancy technology, she says. We need communication, we need information, patience, flexibility. A lot of these things are free. Still, some countries and cities are better equipped for people with disabilities than others. Rivera occasionally has to decide if she's willing to travel somewhere she really wants to see, even if it's not accessible. 2 years ago, she and her partner visited a few islands in Greece where it became clear she couldn't feel fully independent. There were few sidewalks, little public transit, and a lack of lighting. She didn't feel like she could go out at night by herself. I don't like that feeling. So what I try to do is balance it out. I'm willing to deal with inaccessibility for short periods of time if I really want to go somewhere, she says. Rivera's travels have also helped foster brand partnerships with agencies like Delta Airlines and Visit Utah. While these videos have surely been a success from a viewership standpoint, they've also exposed Rivera to new audiences, perhaps not as well versed in the world of disabilities as her own community. She has received comments from people accusing her of faking her disability or asking why she would even want to travel as a deafblind person. What could she even do? Some commenters have said. So Rivera doesn't internalize the naysayers, but rather interprets their words as a sign of how vital her work is. No matter how well I construct my videos, even if I put a disclaimer saying I have a little bit of vision, but I'm still blind, you can't circumvent those comments, she says. I take it as evidence that my work is needed and that we need more disabled travelers. What Rivera's future holds. Although Disability Pride Month is ended, Rivera's advocacy work is not about to stop. She will be a keynote speaker at the Kennedy Krieger Institute's October conference on neurodiversity in the workplace, offering what she calls a high-level message about disability inclusion in the workplace. She also has upcoming travel partnerships scheduled with Claire and George, Accessible Switzerland, and Destination Ann Arbor in Michigan. And while an aspect of disability pride is certainly increased visibility, Rivera's focus is also on changing the words we use when we talk about the disabled community. There has been a movement in recent years to use terms like differently abled instead of disabled, taking issue in particular with the prefix dis. But she notes that refusing to say disabled implies that being disabled is both a bad word and a bad thing. Language reflects our underlying beliefs and attitudes, she says. Language is an entry point to these deeper conversations, and it provides people with something they can do right away, something that is immediately actionable. From blog.innosearch.ai, InnoSearch User Guide, your accessible shopping companion. InnoSearch. Welcome to InnoSearch, the revolutionary e-commerce platform designed to make online shopping a breeze for everyone, especially catering to the needs of the blind and visually impaired community. Our platform is a game changer in the way you shop online, offering unparalleled accessibility, a vast selection of products, and the best deals available. This guide will introduce you to the many features of InnoSearch and how you can leverage them for a seamless shopping experience. Getting started with InnoSearch. What is InnoSearch? InnoSearch stands as the foremost accessible shopping assistant, crafted with the aim to empower the visually impaired. It brings together generative AI, real-time product data from top retailers in the U.S., and an interface designed for accessibility, making it the number one inclusive assistive technology, AT, for the disabled. We provide a comprehensive end-to-end shopping assistant, offering a standardized and accessible shopping experience for the very first time. Accessible navigation. Our UI/UX is optimized for those with low vision, with large text and screen reader-friendly components. Real-time data. Enjoy up-to-date information directly from the biggest platforms. Conversational AI. Engage in a flexible conversational experience for finding out what you need efficiently. How it works. Our platform simplifies the process of finding products and checking out. Product discovery. Enter your search terms and review the results using your preferred method. Highlighting best prices. Automatically identifies and highlights the best prices and deals for you. Checkout flow. Follow our standardized process to complete your purchase with ease. Screen reader accessibility. Every element on our site is tagged and readable by any standard screen reader, ensuring you can navigate through our offerings with ease. Additionally, our platform comes with a high contrast mode that can be enabled for those with colorblindness or low vision. User screen reader accessibility. Store your information with us to ensure a seamless purchasing experience each time you shop. This information is securely stored in your profile and can be easily accessed through voice commands or keyboard shortcuts. Best deals on the net. InnoSearch scans multiple retailers in real time to find you the lowest prices and best deals available. This way, you receive the most up-to-date information all in one place. You can also set up price alerts for specific products to be notified when they go on sale. Keyword search plus conversational AI. Our accessible input fields allow you to simply type what you're searching for, making product discovery straightforward and hassle-free. From there, our InnoSearch chatbot transforms your shopping journey, offering personalized recommendations and detailed product reviews. This ensures you're equipped with all the necessary information to make a well-informed decision. Simple, standardized checkout. Experience a uniform checkout process across all products, no matter which platform they are from. You no longer need to learn how to navigate a new checkout flow every time you buy something online. We've made it easy to learn and use, ensuring a smooth transaction from start to finish. I've ran out of time for this week's Vision News. This is Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next week.